Today is November 9th, 2016, and this is episode number 384 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I am Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief of TMO.
And I'm John Key, grumpy pants-in-chief. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
You know, we're going to have you guest another dozen, two dozen times, and you're going to sound comfortable reading that. So why are you cranky? We won't even get into that. We won't even get into that. Matter of fact, we're going to do our best not to talk politics today. That's what we're going to do. This is going to be
nothing happened, nothing to see.
There's nothing. Right, there's just nothing. Right. This is your
live in denial.
Your succor away from the travails of the political world today, because we're just going to talk about tech stuff.
That's sounds good. Do.
Yeah. All right. So let's see here. We have some topics. Let's talk about a couple of interesting things here. Adam Christensen noted in our TMO Towers that iPhone Plus wait times are still 3 to 4 weeks. iPhone 7 Plus. Did I say that? What did I say?
In the end, you got it right.
Excellent. That's what counts. iPhone 7 Plus wait times are still 3 to 4 weeks, which seems really high this long after the device is shipped. And then you noticed that...
Well, I noticed that personally because I ordered iPhone 7 Plus for my secretary, and she's not going to get it for the ship times were 4 to 5 weeks for me.
4 to 5 weeks?
I ordered that 2 days ago.
For an Apple Watch?
No, for an iPhone 7 Plus.
Oh, for an iPhone 7 Plus.
Correct.
Four to five. I just checked them. They're all 3 to 4 weeks for me. 3 to 5,
that's,
actually.
That's what I got on the shipping notice. So maybe Apple's trying to do the, you know, give you a longer estimate so you don't feel as bad. And when it comes only 3 or 4 weeks from now.
Yeah, expectation management.
Yeah, that's not a bad thing.
But then you noticed that Apple Watch Series 2 wait times are still at 2 weeks.
Yeah, just ordered an Apple Watch 2 for my girlfriend a week ago, and it's not scheduled to show up till the 29th of November or somewhere between the 29th and December 5th. So it's worse than that because we went to the store to pick one up, and this was in Dallas, and the store had nothing in stock, nothing. I think they had one like rose gold pink, you know, in some crazy band that no reasonable human being would want. And to all those rose gold unreasonable band purchasers, I am not sorry. What was worse than them not having it, their attitude was really kind of dismissive of any hope of having it. They said, look, we're probably going to get something in 2 weeks. I wouldn't hold your breath. There's no point to you even trying to look around for a watch. Just order it online.
They're being honest. Why are you cranky about that?
Well, I'm cranky about everything, so that's really not adding much to the conversation. it was just the... I don't know what to make of it, just like I don't know what to make of the iPhone shipment times. It could be a really great thing for Apple. It could be a really messed up thing for Apple. I mean, it's just depending upon what the supply versus the demand is. If the iPhone 7 Plus orders are still so crazy high, well, that's obviously a good thing. And, you know, they just can't keep up with the demand. Or maybe Tim Cook really isn't quite as good at operations as he says he is, or maybe whoever has in charge of operations isn't as good as Tim Cook used
Jeff
to be.
Jeff Williams.
And they bet wrong on what the availabilities and production rates should be. And it looks like in this case, and I think there's some some evidence to this out in the market, that there is a higher proportion of people buying pluses than regular iPhone 7s than there were for the last two go-arounds. So they may have bet wrong on what the balance is, and maybe it's taking more time to kind of readjust those balances on production for the Plus. And the same, I guess, analysis, well, similar analysis works for the Watch.
Well, let's do one device at a time, because I think
sure, just cut me off at the knees, why don't you?
Yeah, they're two separate conversations.
No, I'm just kidding. That's fair enough.
If anything, it seemed like Apple was really pushing the iPhone 7 Plus. So it would all. I mean, and you know, I'm projecting. Onto not a lot of information there, but the way Apple was pushing iPhone 7 Plus, I would be surprised if they weren't. I would be surprised if Apple was caught flat-footed because they just simply underestimated demand. I think that's what I'm trying to say.
I would not be surprised, and I'll tell you why. Because I think I have a little slant that I think is somewhat of an insight here that I haven't heard anyone talk about, which is, what is the longest unanswered feature that everyone has wanted on an iPhone or basically any smartphone with a camera? Zoom.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
It's even longer desired than a bigger iPhone, right? The iPhone 6 was like, we only went for kind of a desert of a year or two between kind of the iPhone 4, where Apple thought the iPhone 5 would be enough bigger, right? And then we had a 5S. So that was a 2-year gap. But I've wanted Zoom since the iPhone 1. Right, a real Zoom, not that horrendous digital garbage.
Yeah,
and so we're talking, a 9-year gap of an unanswered feature that finally became available. So the point is that may have been something that really pushed a lot of consumers to the Plus more so than just the bigger screen, which is kind of traditional. And I think that really had the effect. And to be fair to Apple, you know, it's hard to know. One, it's not something, you know, is it that big a feature? Is it that big a delta? It sounds like it's not a huge percentage mix. Like I forget what was the previous balance for it. It'd be interesting to know what the previous balance was of 6 to 6 plus and 6S to 6S plus mix, but my sense was it was somewhat 60-40 roughly in favor of the smaller phone.
It sounds like it may be higher, like 70-30, but I don't, really? I don't have any data to back that up.
But my point is that let's assume, and I'm just making up numbers because I don't think there are too many solid numbers on this, but let's assume that it was a 20% shift. So it went from 70-30 to maybe 50-50. And Apple made its guess that maybe it would have been a bump of 5%.
Sure.
Right. And they would guess wrong. You know, is that a horrible guess? Is that, you know, a lack of Apple having the, no, it's a perfectly reasonable guess, but a surprise is a surprise nonetheless. And they have to shift that production. And my guess is that's probably what's going on there. They didn't expect that shift. And, you know, it's another interesting question is that a sustained shift, or is that kind of pent up, kind of like with the original iPhone 6? People were pent up. There was so much pent up demand for the bigger screen, and that had a huge burst in sales for the people that really wanted it. And now things have equalized. You know, a lot of people still want, if anything, because they haven't had a small phone, the iPhone SE became somewhat more successful than they anticipated because that was unanswered for so long. So is it a permanent change in demographics for that move? And you know, I clearly watch too much Election Time talking about demographics. Hey, is that, you know, in iPhone demographics for screen size, or is it just kind of there's going to be a blip because there was pent up demand for this feature, and then once that's sated, Things return to.
What are we at? We're at 6-7 weeks after iPhone 7 Plus shipped. I would call 3 to 4 week delivery time after 7 weeks, after almost 2 months. I would call that either a problem with production or higher than anticipated demand.
Do you think that a production line of the scale that we're talking about can reasonably be changed and retooled that quick? And I ask that genuinely. I don't know what the answer is. Just the sheer volume of this might not be as easy to shift.
Yeah, that's true. Apple is manufacturing devices at a huge scale. In part, even though there are other manufacturers, even believe it or not, Samsung still. Who ship more devices, but they're shipping much smaller quantities of much larger numbers of devices.
Correct.
And Apple is when we, Apple's product line is so focused that the individual numbers of any given product are probably some of the, if not probably, have got to be the highest in the consumer electronics world. Is that true? Is there something? Is there something that like? Certainly at the high end, certainly with the kind of money that we're talking about, Apple's iPhones have to be some of the highest volume products on the planet.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable on the consumer electronics side. I'm sure the people that make, chips of some kind that produce in greater volumes, but it's a very different kind of product. So I don't know if it's an unreasonable delay or not, I guess the numbers will be borne out in the next quarter. I have my doubts that it's an extra boost in demand. That demand is so great that we're going to be surprised that, they sold 20% more overall iPhone 7, whether it's plus or otherwise mixed, than, say, the 6S. Because it's still basically the same shape. There's not a lot of excitement about the general phone over the previous generation. There's a lot of, I think, building up anticipation on the next iPhone.
Some tricky aspect, for instance, in particular the camera or the lens array or some aspect of that is actually proving to be a manufacturing bottleneck. That's so possible.
You're actually agreeing with me that it's not necessarily a bigger boost in demand. Meaning it's not that they're selling 20% more, it's that there's difficulty in production. So if I had to guess, it's more likely to be a supply issue or a mix of supply issue than it is, hey, there's actually extra demand more so than they anticipated. And I could be wrong on that.
My gut says that I'm about to second guess myself. So my gut, John, says
I've been second guessing you the whole time.
We should explain that you're here because Jeff is on a cruise.
Good for Jeff. That's great.
Yeah, he's out having fun somewhere. Whereas he left us anyway. So we're not talking about that. So because he's out of the country, he was out of the country on Tuesday. He left us. Anyway, all right. So we're not talking about that. My gut says that demand for iPhone 7 Plus is higher than Apple anticipated. That there's actually folks who want that. I don't have any data to back that up whatsoever. That was my gut reaction. But looking at the fact that all colors, all carriers, and all memory configurations, not that that's that big a deal, are all showing roughly the same extended delivery times. That says to me that it may actually be a bottleneck with the component supplier or some other aspect of the manufacturing process, to wit what you're saying, to wit
give it to me, Brian. You know what you do. What you're basically saying is you agree with me, and I was right. I know it pains you. I'll take that silence as an admission and confession.
Listen, who is quicker? Who do you know who is quicker to acknowledge and embrace that he was wrong?
Actually, not only that, but you're always very gracious and objective in your comments. I'm teasing you just because I enjoy teasing you.
Yeah, but, I know it's good. Because like if it was demand, you'd think that.
Well, one caveat, by the way, where I don't think it was, and you will appreciate the pedanticness of this, if anyone will, is that I think the exception is there is one color, which is the jet black, which may also be for reasons of production, but that, I think that one is a definitely more highly demanded unit than the others. So that one may have particularly different reasons for it, and it may even be experiencing slightly different delays.
Yeah. So if we were seeing 3 to 5 weeks for it, and everything else was 1 to 2 weeks,
right?
Then I could say, okay, you know, it's definitely a demand thing, right. but it's that across the board thing.
I agree. You are totally the general principle, if not the pedantic totality of that is right on the money. I agree.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. I mean, there are probably worse problems that Apple can have to have somewhat of it, like too much of a delay and people go elsewhere. But just enough of a delay enhances the desirability and perceived value and allure of any given product. And 3 to 4 weeks is probably that sweet spot.
I again agree with you. I think you're right. And it couldn't have happened to a more boring product, right? This is the third year of basically the same boring form factor that was boring, by the way, from the very first day. And it's still boring all the more so on the third year. So the fact that it has any marketing allure and wantability occurring from some kind of at least appearance of demand really works well. Apple couldn't have lucked out more on so many levels how many great factors have helped it.
Hold on. Is it truly luck? Or does Tim not know what he's doing?
Are you saying they sabotage Samsung's phones to blow up?
No, not that. It's not just Samsung's phones blowing up.
But that was definitely a lucky helping factor. Come on. For Apple. In Apple's view. For sales.
You know, to that point, John, actually, now that you bring that up, that's really interesting because... maybe it is a higher than anticipated demand because the Plus's biggest competitor is off the market.
And they're so desperate that they have no preference for any colors.
No, yeah, I'm not buying that either. Well, what about not so much a bottleneck in component supply, as in there's a problem, but rather Apple had already bought everything that could be made, anticipating a certain demand. That demand is higher, so it turns into a bottleneck, but not because there's some kind of a problem, but because everything was already being made that could be made. Are you with me here?
Yeah, but that presumes that there's no anticipation of build out on a different color side.
Yeah, presumptions meaning
it's totally on demand, which is not true for a product that scale. It's just not. They have to have a certain number of level of days that they're building up. And if everyone really hated rose gold, as everyone should, then there would be a slightly lesser timetable for that.
No, but not if it's the camera. The camera seems to me to be the most likely thing that could be the holdup. For one thing, it's the one thing that's different in the 7 Plus from the 7.
Yeah, but let's follow the supply chain. They get 10 cameras, right? They can only make 10 units. And they make an allocation of, three of rose gold, three of gold, and three of white, or whatever it is, right? Like that. And, you know, people of good taste are like, I don't want that horrible, disgusting rose gold color. So why would I want that? And so the idea is they used all 10 of their cameras, but three wouldn't be bought up at the same rate, and so they would be more readily available. Whereas the other, because people have much better taste, have bought up all the white.
The cameras aren't color-coded. Cameras get put into the device that gets made.
Well, again, you're assuming that it's a totally on-demand thing, that they're not pre-allocating a certain batch of rose gold, a certain number of gold. And you may be right. I'd be really shocked by that. But I think that they are making batches of rose gold, batches of gold, and whatnot. And so then if that's the case, then it happens that they predicted the right volumes for each color in such a way that the delays end up being identical, which is not, you know, impossible. But just seems less likely.
It's not likely. It's not likely. All right. So to summarize,
I was right. I don't know what about, but I was right.
To summarize, there are two different versions of there being supply constraints. One version would be that something is screwed up. Someone didn't manage something correctly. There is,
cameras.
Special machines broke somewhere, right? Because Apple uses a lot of specialized machinery in its manufacturing. Another version is that the supply chain, this particular aspect of the supply chain, had already ramped up to meet what Apple had wanted, but now demand is a little bit higher because the Note 7 explodes.
Yeah, that's possible.
By the way, screw Samsung. Did you see this business, by the way? Did you see this business that government anti-corruption investigators are actually investigating some of Samsung's local political corruption?
I'm sure that's going to work out just as well as it has on every other investigation, and the pardons to the CEO of that company by the president and whatnot, as it has in the past. But yeah, you know, in a lot of ways, it couldn't happen to a more deserving company, right? But I do have a little bit of sympathy in that I think, you know, the press dogpiles on an issue and then blows it out of proportion in every way, right? So, on the other hand, I tend to agree with you. They've done so many seedy things in the past that it's, you know, my sympathy is very limited.
Yes. Exactly. All right, we're not gonna talk about Samsung though
anymore. Rat hole.
All right, so now we have the Apple Watch Series 2, which again, you had ordered one. You were finding 3 weeks? Is that 3 weeks or 4 week delay?
Let's see. I got it last week, and it won't be till. So it's, yeah, four-week delay. It may be slightly different for the unit that I ordered for my girlfriend. I got the Nike one.
Yep.
So I don't know if those are particularly worse. But, again, the attitude of those in the store was just very matter of fact. You're not getting one out of the store. Go order online. We won't have availability for 2 weeks, which to me is kind of shocking that, like, granted, it's in Dallas. It's not, you know, one of the flagship, like the Fifth Avenue stores. It might be a different story there. But it was a big – it's a big store in a big mall. It's not one of their mini stores or something like that. And there aren't a lot of stores kind of nearby. So I was kind of shocked.
Well, so clearly that behavior is learned behavior because he or she has been dealing with this particular problem for a number of weeks.
Yeah, yeah, right. That's clear
the question
too.
Though is whether or not it's effectively policy. Like, okay, just tell folks that they should just go order online, or if this person is simply, you know, reacting at some gut level to the situation on the floor.
Dude, get out of my head. That is so interesting that you went to the policy issue, I wonder if there's some kind of feeling like, do we really want to waste cycles, human cycles, on dealing with this watch thing? If it's not, I mean, this is a real kind of scary scenario, right? Like a bad scenario for the watch, which is it's not selling that great. We don't want to really focus our energies too much on it. For those that are wacky enough to want one of these things, let's just send them to the website and try to minimize our spend of resources for this device. I don't know if that's the case. It might also, and you know, the much more sunny side version is this thing is selling way better. This is the version Rev 2 that most people are waiting for. It's gotten way better reviews between the updated operating system and the processors and waterproofiness of the design than the original. So maybe it's just selling way better. And then if that's the case, is it selling way better because they had lowered their production and estimates internally of what they should expect because sales of the original were kind of really slowing down a bit. And so they lowered their expectations so much that the kind of boost they got was unanticipated or, you know, anywhere in between those kind of extremes.
Yeah,
I don't know what the answer is to that.
We don't know. I personally, again, on my gut on the Apple Watch Series 2 is that it is selling well.
Again, the interesting, I agree with you, even, you know, even the low sales towards the tail end of the Apple Watch 1 by every objective standard was selling well relative to the other smartwatches on, right? I mean, it's basically the number one product.
No competition with smartwatches.
Right. The question is it selling well relative to how low the trend line became towards the end for the Apple Watch 1, which is, you know, not necessarily a high bar? Or is it selling well in that, hey, they may sell 20 or 30% more overall units for this product line in this next whatever year, year and a half of its lifespan? And I don't know what the answer to that is.
No, I don't either. I don't either. But I think that the app. I don't either. But I suspect it's doing well.
Yeah, and the other part of this is, you know, as much as I like to dogpile on a lot of issues, by every objective measure, this watch is a really successful product. I mean, we're talking billions of dollars in sales for a new category. Is it as big as the Mac or the iPad? Clearly not. Might it be? I doubt it. But it's an out-of-the-park home run for any other company on earth. Like any other company on earth would be doing high fives and touchdowns, and this is a high-margin product that they pulled out of their posterior from thin air that nobody needs. And frankly, I have one. This is my second one. I still don't need this thing. I don't particularly like it, and yet I'm still wearing this thing.
Yeah, you want to buy
it? I'm a total idiot. Yeah, I had the original one, and I got the new one, and you know, I'm using it basically as a glorified health tracker, and that's about it. All the other use, let me go down one rat hole. All you people that are wearing an Apple Watch are probably going to get cancer because I think it's not a medical health question. It's a question of physics. You have a device that is constantly sending RF right on your skin 24 hours a day. I run my Apple Watch in airplane mode, so it's not doing that. So it has very limited utility other than tracking my health and telling me my time.
You're such a weirdo, dude. You have an Apple Watch and you're running in an airplane mode. That is so weird.
Dude, it lasts 4 days that way, by the way, without recharging.
No doubt, but it's weird. I mean, you have this, the point of Apple Watch is that it's a connected device. It's a connected device. It connects to your iPhone.
Because what I need in my life is more connectivity. I need another 30 notifications like a Jack Russell Terrier jumping up into my face saying, pay attention to me.
Buy my Zenith.
That's what's limiting my life.
But why don't you have a mechanical timepiece on your wrist instead?
Because it doesn't do the health tracker thing. What was interesting, all the apps basically suck on dealing with health tracking as far as I can tell on the Apple Watch. But I just look at the health app, and you can look in there, and every, like, 2-3 minutes, it's taking a sample of your heart rate. And so it's interesting. Like, at random times, my heart rate will spike up, and then I realize, oh, I was yelling at the TV at some idiot, right? And that makes sense. But other times, it's weird. It's like, was it because I ate the taco that my heart rate went up? Is it bad for me to eat tacos? At some point, someone's going to make some really smart apps. I'm sorry if you guys hear the sirens. I'm in New York. But someone's going to make some really smart apps that start to notice, look, at the time when this heart rate spiked up, you were eating and you were eating at this restaurant. So maybe that restaurant doesn't agree with you. And I'll start getting really interesting health insights there. There's no utility outside of me looking through that list and just laughing at that. Oh, I was watching that show and that really annoyed me, but my heart rate was up for now. But at some point, I think there's going to be really interesting things, really interesting insights about your personal health that will come out there. But utility-wise, yeah, I'm totally not using this. This is basically a brick on my wrist that I'm using for no good reason, which is clearly not the typical use case. But again, it's an exercise in physics. The radiation is on your hand 24 hours a day. You will not be shocked that if that means something somewhere down the line, because the entire debate of like, yeah, will radiation do something to you over time is kind of straightforward in my opinion. Yeah, but
why are the cops having a conversation with the sirens right now? Is that, that's just for us, isn't it?
It's New York. It's New York, you know. Sorry.
So speaking of Apple Watches on your wrist, I noticed when we're actually watching each other. Jeff and I normally don't watch each other because, you know, we love each other so much we don't need to. But, you know, John and I are still in a new relationship and, you know, we have to look in each other's eyes while we're recording these things. But anyway, I noticed your ceramic edition on your wrist. Mm-hmm. An hour ago. What do you think about it?
The fact that it's ceramic or not doesn't really change the fact that it's mostly useless in the way I use it, right? I gave it to Jeff. Jeff didn't like to try when we had a dinner when I was out in Colorado.
It was about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. And he didn't like how heavy it was. And that may be a function of personal girthy size of me, where I don't really. Yeah, the other one, the previous version I had was the aluminum, and it was clearly lighter. But something about I got to give Apple credit. These bands that everyone the cheap rubbery bands. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're part silicon or what, but whatever composition they made, I hate jewelry of all kinds. I hate watches. I don't like wearing them. I feel it's like almost like a shackle. But this is so comfortable that I genuinely forget it's on. Mm. And that may be peculiar to me or not, but and that's not a function of the ceramic. But even with the weight, I guess I'm a big enough fella that the weight just is inconsequential to me.
So,
I don't
listen,
know.
I will tell you, when it comes to weight on your wrist for a watch, it quickly becomes what you're used to. To wit, when I went from wearing my Zenith, which is a heavy mechanical timepiece, to wearing my Apple Watch, the thing that bothered me was how light the Apple Watch was. So Jeff not liking the weight of the ceramic one is simply because he's not used to having anything on his wrist that weighs anything. After right. 2 or 3 weeks, that becomes the norm. So.
Yeah, it's an interesting question whether or not if you work out, do you want something like that jangling while you're running or something like that? And I don't know. Again, I don't notice it. So here is where there is a big difference. All right. I am oblivious in so many areas of life and thought. But one area that I'm particularly oblivious is with regard to my own body and other objects. I seem to slam into them all the time. They're like magic bruises all over my legs. I have no idea what I slammed into, the turnstile at the subway or something, all the time. And when I had a watch, I'm always slamming it against the turnstile, against the desk. And I have a desk that is like it's solid aluminum ingots, really, and glass. The old watch, I would grind against like the steel in the subway or something like that, not noticing. And the glass was definitely weaker on the old one because it broke it, and it definitely scratched something about, you know, smacking your arm.
Well, you've got full sapphire on that one.
And yeah, this one is better. And the other thing that's interesting is when the body of this ceramic grinds up against, like here, I don't know if you can hear it.
Sure.
Grinds up against the aluminum of my desk. It feels more like the ceramic is carving the aluminum than the aluminum is carving the ceramic. And I looked for nicks, you know, in the places that I think I smacked it, and it's pretty much mark-free. So if you're a particularly klutzy or totally oblivious type of person that smacks and harms watches, this might be for you for just durability. It seems significantly more durable than the aluminum watch. I can't comment on, you know, how much better it is than the steel. I imagine the sapphire is the exact same. Steel does, and my previous steel watches that I've had also, they get marred up like crazy because I'm banging it up against the turnstiles and other things. This one is pretty I mean, it's pretty like new. I don't think there's a scratch on it, and I've certainly, you know, abused it. So there may be value in that. But considering I really don't use this watch for any function other than reading the time, right, it's pretty much a more expensive, useless thing.
Yeah, you're a completely ridiculous individual. I'm just going to let you know that. So, but I have one more question about
about
your airplane mode Apple Watch. You're using it as a health tracker. Do you like turn it off airplane mode once a day so it syncs up to your phone?
I turn it off like in whenever I put it on the stand every 3 or 4 days. And it'll sync up there, and that's when the data comes to that. Nah, it's fine. I filled it up with music, but I don't have wireless earpods because Apple is incompetent in producing anything on a timely basis. And therefore, I can't use headphones with it because there are no headphones that Apple makes that will work with it right now, unless you consider the Beats stuff. And I don't, because I'd like to forget about the disaster that is that purchase and the disaster that is Apple Music.
Are you kidding me? Are you going to call Apple Music not a success? Ignore. I don't give a crap what you think about the interface. I'm talking about commercial success.
If you ignore design, engineering, usability, and focus sheerly on money, it is a great success. And then you are a champion of the Scully era. Congratulations. By the way, genuinely congratulations on the interview with Scully. It was very good. I liked it. Uh-huh. I don't think you got enough kudos for that, by the way.
Thank you. I appreciate that. All right. Let's we have definitely
gone off the rails.
Yeah, we've gone off the rails here. So on the same note as demand for the Apple Watch Series 2 and the iPhone 7 Plus, we've got data. We've got a report. Let's just call it a report from Slice Intelligence saying that. Let me actually find this.
Look at you, all prepared, got documents and stuff, reading things, investigating.
Not really quite that good. Apple Pay. Here we go. Slice Intelligence saying that the Apple's new MacBook Pro has sold more units than Dell's XPS 13 and 15 in the last. So Apple has sold more of these devices in the, what has it been, 2 weeks? Than Dell has sold over the last 10 months.
Oh my gosh. Stop the presses. I mean, you know what you got to stop the presses for? Way to set the bar real, real low. Give
Dell
me a break.
Dell sells more computers than Apple sells Macs.
Yeah, okay, whatever. They're talking about a specific model of Dell, not all of Dell's laptops. Note.
Yeah, sure, of course.
That's like saying we sold more than a specific model of a Samsung phone that they sell 300,000 units or 500,000 units or 2 million at most. Give me a break. Way to be real particular in the stats there and make it sound like it's more meaningful than it is. It's a useless comment.
So this is sales for sales in 5 days.
Which I applaud them for their dumb clickbait. Good for them. But it's meaningless. Meaningless tripe.
5 days worth of sales beating 10 months worth of sales.
Beating a specific model of some specific brand of one of their 8,000 models. Who cares? Meaningless.
4 times as many units as the Surface Book in 5 days. That's Microsoft Surface Book.
The Surface Book, yeah. That model has been a disaster for Microsoft. They've had 8 months of technical problems with that. So again, way to set the bar way low. Way low. Want to compare it to the Osborne or something too next?
Well, okay, all right. Here's the and Apple also said that pre-orders that they've never had this many pre-orders for a.
That's a significant statement. And I listen, me crapping on the horrid nature of that journalism, if you could call it that, it was clickbait. And again, I applaud them for the clickbaitiness of it. But it is a very different issue. It's not mutually exclusive that this may really, one, be doing super well. It's just a poor premise on that article's, kind of construct. But they may be doing great. I would be shocked if not only would I be shocked, I'd be terrified and worried for Apple if it wasn't like their greatest sale, because they haven't made a new laptop in forever.
Right.
There's and that so would much pent up demand. So that would again, be the difference. It's setting the bar low.
That would be the difference between, and we won't know this, only time will actually show this, and we might not even know with time because Apple isn't releasing numbers anymore. But the telling difference will be how long those sales go, because if it's all pent up demand, it'll be these initial sales only. Right, and then sales would drop off. If people are actually excited about this device and actually want it, sales should remain elevated, you know, for a while.
So what
for the next 18 months that Apple sells this thing?
For 18 months. So I think this is interesting. I don't know what a healthy kind of curve would look like. You know, it, obviously a big bump right up after it went on sale. But even for a good, normal, healthy, successful models that they had in their past, what's a good curve look like? I imagine it tapers off after, you know, towards the end of the year when people used to expect Apple to release something every year because they were competent back then when Steve Jobs was beating everyone daily. And that's what is not clearly happening nearly enough at Apple. But now I don't even know what the new normal is. Is it 18 months for a new laptop spec bump? Is it 2 years for – I don't even know. But let's assume we're living in the past where it's a one-year cycle. Towards the end, you know, how much less is it sales than kind of at the beginning traditionally for all these models? I suspect that the buying cycles for businesses and all kinds of people outside of the super enthusiast and the super needy for a new model, you know, are consistent throughout the year. Meaning that they'll be raised throughout the year because people will still be upgrading later in the year from models past. So I actually think there's a pretty decent chance, especially if they lower the price, which is kind of crazy high for this model a little bit somewhere towards the end of the year, that it will do well all throughout. But it's a good point. I mean, you got to worry if the demand really significantly dries up, say, 4 months in. And nobody's, you know, interested at all at that point.
I would say if Apple actually has strong demand after 4 months, the product is a success. It would be that 2 to 4 week range where it's only pent up demand.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think? I think it's going to be successful past the 4 month mark, but I'm curious if you.
Well,
do.
I mean, we've talked about this, but I think that the money that Apple's charging for this thing, for the RAM and the processors you get, is not a pro device. The Touch Bar is super interesting to me, but
agreed.
16 gigs of RAM on a pro machine is ridiculous. It's just ridiculous.
Charging $1,200 for a 1 terabyte upgrade, right, from for the SSD to a 2 terabyte model is crazy. I think you can get 2.5-inch, 4-terabyte models for around $1,500 right now, 4-terabyte models. So, one, that's ludicrously high. And it also set the bar really low because there are also Samsung cells, 16-terabyte, 2.5-inch drives. Not to say – clearly they're not using 2.5-inch drives in this new model. They're using kind of that stick format. But the point is it could have been a lot more. And not with a lot more work. And Apple really doesn't seem to be even trying to use its economies of scale to push prices down to give us a boost in storage. We haven't had a meaningful boost in storage with Apple in way too long. It is an embarrassment. The engineers should kill themselves from embarrassment of making a 5K iMac with a max 3 terabyte drive, which is also the most unreliable drive made in the history of the world, that they haven't upgraded that to 8 terabytes. And somehow Apple has stalled around that range where 1 terabyte was the max for, I mean, it may be 4 or 5 years. I don't know. It's crazy how long we've been stalled storage-wise.
I suspect, John, that Apple doesn't care because Apple is basing Apple is looking at what everybody uses and is meeting what people use.
I agree with the first part, which is Apple doesn't care. And I disagree that they have any sense of reality there. They have no, they are Nero.
I think you're projecting away. Your own bizarre demands and needs for your computing products onto Apple.
If that were the case, I'd be bitching that they haven't released, six new 30-inch displays or 10 new 30-inch displays or 40-inch displays and whatnot. No, I mean, the storage needs, I'll give, Walt, a friend of mine, typical, family dude. He has three kids. He takes pictures like a madman. A 1 terabyte drive for 4K video and 1080p video, and the photos that you have when you have three kids, is crazy big. It doesn't fit on a 1 terabyte drive. It hasn't for a while. So, he's not exactly, a developer or artificial intelligence guru or an augmented reality developer. You know what I mean? He's not doing crazy Photoshop. He's just taking photos. So this notion that they have any sense of reality is so ludicrous. They are selling storage, a terabyte of storage, for whatever stupid price for their stupid iCloud service that works and destroys your photos. While Amazon and Google are giving limitless storage for free, they have no sense of reality. They're beyond out of touch with storage and how things work. They're destroying my iTunes files. They're destroying people's files by defaulting them to some unknown feature of how iCloud moves your data and your home data and randomly deleting stuff on your drive. They are out of their minds, Nero-like, with regard to storage and even common people's usage. And the only thing that's saving them is that the common, my aunt's level of sophistication in using this feature, she doesn't even know that half her data was probably destroyed yet. They're so oblivious. Hey, John, their users are so oblivious that they don't even know how bad things are.
John, how do you feel about the Mac Pro?
Slowly I turn. Only you and I are old enough to know that, right?
No. I think we've got some listeners who might know that one. All right. So on a slightly happier note, did you see this this thing we covered? I think it was Monday. Someone released an iOS sideloadable app and a macOS Sierra app that lets you either, I completely don't care about the first part, which is being able to run Touch Bar virtually on your Mac. I don't care about that. But I am super interested in being able to run it on my iPad.
I did. But first, I'm going to prove how much more brilliant I am than Apple yet again. And why they just don't turn over the reins to me so I run everything and fix everything up is a mystery to me how that's gone unnoticed.
Hey, you'd be a great CEO of Apple. I'll be the first to admit that.
Apple doesn't have nearly enough a-hole. Steve Jobs was the chief a-hole in chief of ever. And you need some of that. You really need some of that passion and vision from one of those.
I did just say that you'd make a great CEO.
Yes, thank you. I got the point. I got the point. So, the Touch Bar, it's above the keys, and I think it's cool. Unfortunately, their sloth and non-production has tainted what is otherwise a pretty neat feature, and their subpar engineering and everything else and high prices have really spoiled that. But you know what would be cool? One, obviously, if they got their act together and eventually converged into having a touchscreen Mac, which is a rat hole for another day. But you know what would be cool? That trackpad on the 15-inch is ginormous. And by the way, it's interesting. You can use an Apple Pencil on it as well to write on it. But, and the palm rejection apparently is fantastic on it from what little use I've had of it and other reports. But wouldn't it be cool if the entire bottom half of the MacBook was basically an iPad, was basically a fat touch strip. If it was all touchscreen, you could generally rest your palms on it and type away. But then you have, instead of, a 20 pixel high or 40 pixel high strip at the top, you have some serious touch space ability, kind of almost an integrated touchpad that extends the screen down horizontally. And that might have been a real innovation if Apple had anyone at all that was interested in innovating. Unfortunately, they don't.
You know, John,
but there you go.
I get where you're coming from on the...
Because they already have a generous touchpad that doesn't show anything on it, right?
Right. And I would guess that that was a deliberate choice and not a lack of effort. That I'm sure that Apple looked at exactly what you just described.
I wait for objective evidence why that was not a lack of effort.
Well, because they looked at it and they decided that the thing that they did would be better than the thing that you just described for whatever reason.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the first time I was right and they were wrong. So anyway, we can continue on.
Okay, let's continue.
I'm sorry, I derailed you. Yeah, I thought it was cool that you could use an iPad for the touchy bar thing. Yeah,
have you done that yet?
I haven't bothered because I wasn't that interested.
No, fair enough.
Did you use it?
No.
So clearly you weren't that interested.
I'm extremely interested, but who's got time? I also don't necessarily have the skills to compile an app and sideload it.
This is an interesting rat hole. When I worked at Next, it was a very interesting thing in culture about the nature of how open source software was released or even copyrighted software there. Interface Builder, which is now Xcode, makes it super easy to you don't have to know squat to compile anything. It's really a big button that says compile this, and it makes the object code and an app, and it just builds it. You can double click it and run it. Super easy. So what happened, even people that weren't programmers at all, software would be distributed on FTP sites. This was way back in the day, even before the World Wide Web, and with the entire Xcode package. And you would just open up the package. You could change the code if you wanted to. You know, non-programmers would never touch it, but they just double-click open the equivalent Xcode, file, push the compile button, and you're done. It is interesting that that is not a cultural norm with Apple developers that want to do – there are a few examples, but it's really rare where developers have released the entire Xcode package. Because if they did that, you could sideload iPhone and iPad programs super easily because you can always load your own stuff, anything you quote-unquote compile your stuff.
Steve was against that. I mean, Steve was all about the control. He might have been all for it at Next, but when he got to Apple, he was all about the control.
Yeah, but the point is that that's a thing that's impossible to control. If the developers just choose to, stuff on GitHub, if you just put out the full Xcode package, you could double click it and silo it. Apple literally can't stop you, or they would have to, somehow stop all developers that use Xcode from sideloading their own programs to test. So it's just interesting to me that I think it's more cultural than policy from Apple or technical, that has never become a thing when it was totally a thing.
Fair enough.
At Next.
That's a good insight.
Yeah, but the point is, it's actually not that hard. If they gave the Xcode package, you should give it a try. Just double click the thing, and you'll see there's a build it menu thing. You build it, and it's done. There's really not much more to it if it's a full Xcode package that they give you.
Yeah, it seems like it is, but I haven't done it. All right, I'll let you know if I get around to doing it. Who's got time, man? I don't have time.
You've got time. You just don't care. Be honest. At least I was honest. I'm like, I don't care. But I don't care enough.
Living on Australian time, that's all I'm saying. So, we had this other topic, but we're kind of out of time.
All right. Well, for another day then.
For another day, yeah. Yeah, I appreciate your subbing in for Jeff. Can you do it again next week? Because he's going to be at MacTech Conference.
He may have pitchforks about that, but I'm happy to do it.
I'll risk it. So this is what I'm going to do. All right, you got that script in front of you?
I do.
Okay, I'm going to play another bumper, and then I'm going to say a thing, and then you're going to say a thing, and then I'm going to say a thing, and then you're going to say a thing, and then I'm going to play the outro, and then we're actually done. That's how this all works. Right. Okay. All right.
I'll try my best.
Let's try this here. So we're going to go. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine, believe it or not. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is provided by Boom, recorded for TMO. And that's all for this week.
Stay subscribed.
About as natural. Well, anyway. And and we'll see you at the Mac Observer.
That we will. It's like you're doing one of those mannequin challenges, but with your voice.